Well, hold on. Tap your mana. Oh yeah,
What?
okay. Yeah. Yeah, so I
No,
guess.
no, no! You fucked me, McBain.
Wait, what'd you do?
I copied my stage with stage.
Oh my God.
McBain.
That was hilarious.
You made me
Wait, why did you
hesitate.
tap the mana first? Why didn't you just tap the stage in response,
It's
copy,
how I
and
do it
then
sometimes.
why?
I don't know, cuz.
Oh my God, that was incredible to watch.
No.
So for when we open, or when we
Because
edit this in
if you do
later.
the thing that costs stuff first, you can undo until you pay for it. It's always,
Yeah.
isn't it always better to do
Yeah.
the action first?
Yeah.
This is incredible.
I would have had it if not for.
For why would you
Don't blame
do
this on me.
it?
Legacy's back, and it's Friday night. I sleeved a band, packing my dread of knights. Opponent ponders, and I turn one ponder two. But what's the worst that I could see? And that's about the time they dash in a monkey. Made a treasure, stole tendrils from me. Nobody likes it when the wind comes free. What the hell, R&D? Ragavan again, Ragavan again. Later on MTGO, I cast a looting Bender Grizzle, brand new to my yard, and then I pass the turn. Oh, what's the worst that I could see? That's about the time they dashed in a monkey. Stole Rihanna and they cast it for free. All I can do is right click and concede. What the hell, R&D? Ragavan again, Ragavan again. Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy podcast is experiencing a two generic mana, one red enchantment with cumulative upkeep, one red mana. Blue creatures cannot block creatures you control. Non-blue creatures cannot block creatures you control unless your controller pays an additional one life for each blocking creature. My name is Quinn Omori, and I'm here as always with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey.
I was waiting for like Meltdown or Flash Fires. And I don't know what this card is by description, but I have to assume there's an enchantment called Heat Wave.
Yes, sir. Some visions. This guy remembers a card. He knows what's up. Jeff, how's it going?
Hot. Very hot.
Hot. Just like all of the whole coast, I think, and other
Yeah.
parts of the world too, right now. And we've let him stifle and sweat for a little while longer. Brendan McBain. McBain, how are you doing?
Actually quite cool.
This
live in
guy.
a garden suite of a house, so it's like a nice like 15-16 degrees in here. I don't know what that is in make-believe temperatures in the United States of America, but it's quite
Wait,
refreshing.
I live partially underground like a mole as well, and it's still got to be above 20 in my place. Like it's a lot better than it was.
I'm very
it's
hot.
that cool in your house?
Oh yeah, it's cool. It's very enjoyable. Hank just there like half of the place is like a stone tile. I know marble or whatever people say. And Hank will lie down on that. And I'll kind of take his ear and like spread his ear down onto the stone so it's like maximum heat conductivity. And he cools right down.
Just straight onto the marble tile. If he gets really cold, he'll cuddle up to the jade toilet.
The jade statue, as we call it, actually.
Yeah, exactly. We have some housekeeping. Jeff, clean things
I'm
up.
Back. I'm back. We have housekeeping after a multi-month hiatus, but the downside of it is it's one of the exact same events we've been talking about for over a year at this point.
It's news, though. It's new news.
It's new news. It's happening. Puget Sound, Battleground, number three at the Angel of Winds Arena. I had wings written down and I had to change it because that sounds too much like a magic card. In Everett, Washington, October 2nd and 3rd. Tickets on sale July 1st. Very exciting. This looks like it's happening. We just need our government to open the border again, which I think is looking good given that our mask mandate's getting lifted also on the 1st. So things are looking good. We were just looking up some hotel room prices. you know, peeping the area, seeing what's going on, looking at the events. $75 entry for Legacy. Is it? We just looked at this, but I lost it now. Is it a 1 day thing for Legacy or just 2 day?
It's a 2 day event, but
the individual Legacy's only on the first day. 1 day, right? Okay.
Yeah, there's so on day one you can play Modern, Legacy, or 93, 94 Old School, and then day two. Oh, and there's a. Oh my God, there's so many things.
Yeah, you skipped over half of them.
I should. I just saw a wall of text. So there's also day one, a Canadian Highlander 1K side event. And then there's a Pioneer 1K event as well. Day two, they have a team trios. So that's you and two other friends. So it could be all three of us. Who knows? Probably not. And you're playing Pioneer, Modern, and Legacy non-unified. So you each bring a deck from each format and you play. And that is up to $10,000 in total prizes for that event. And then there's a Canadian Highlander Part 2 team trios. It doesn't say if it's unified or not. That would be like such a deck building cluster in Canadian Highlander, but kind of cool at the same time. And that's also on the Sunday. And then also on the Sunday, there's a pre-modern event, which I didn't know about, which sounds pretty awesome. And I definitely want to play in that. Are you boys excited?
I am very excited.
I'm like moderately. Try not moderately? I feel like I've just got used to like tempering my expectations, you know?
Oh, okay.
Over the last year and a half, where I'm just like, yeah, we'll see what happens.
So if we could confirm for you this is happening 100% of the time, COVID's going to be okay, borders going to be open,
everything's going to be fine, then yeah, for excited. Sure. But I'm just like, yeah, sounds good.
That's fair.
And I'm not like pessimistic about it, but I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay.
Like to me, this having been to have all of us having been to Eternal Weekend, like really, this feels like a bit of an Eternal Weekend done differently on the West Coast, which I think is amazing. And I definitely want to continue to support it. And it's contrary to Eternal Weekend, actually announced ahead of time, and there's information and all that stuff, rather than like the day before saying, hey, by the way, we have an event. And we must have had this space booked for, you know, several months, but we didn't tell anyone.
Right. Everybody's booking flights based on, well, that's when it was last year.
Yeah.
Even though it's a 3-hour drive, I'm going to fly down and then try and sleep in the airport just so I get the true experience.
Well, we should probably fly to a different airport and then have to like
stay overnight.
Fly again. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do one of those convoluted like short hop flights, but you end up being like, yeah, like went only to San Francisco and to come back up, it was not really worth it.
That sounds excellent.
I wanted to it's not really related to this, but they have an event this list is non-unified. Have you guys ever played in a unified event? I really want to one day, it's such a mess, play like a Team Trios unified Legacy.
We event. Could play it.
What? This? Yeah, but that's non-unified.
No, but we could I'm saying we could play one. Like we could play one pretty easily.
Oh, between like lands, D&T, and like
yeah, we're fucked on Wasteland.
And port. We'll figure it out. We're closer than a lot of people.
Yeah.
Can we be the ultimate Team Trios Unified Legacy podcast?
Probably only because other podcasts would argue over who gets to play Brainstorm.
Right. They would also play a good deck well.
I just get Brainstorm. Let's say
I see McBain pondering, which is something he wouldn't be able to do in this unified tournament.
I feel you two would kind of camp out on your decks, and then I would be like, okay, what am I going to play?
Playing Eldrazi with that Wasteland.
I could play a bunch of... I could play any number of broken combo decks. It's fine. And they don't have to play Wasteland. In fact, might be out at, in fact, because I like to have one Wasteland. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, you know, maybe I'll be a pro at this. Oh, no, that wouldn't work either. I was going to suggest the deck I've been tinkering with, but that really doesn't work if McBain's trying to play lands.
I was trying to think of like lands, Esper Vile, and...
Then I got a Brainstorm.
No, yeah, then you got the Brainstorms. All right.
We'll figure it out. We'll get back to you, listeners.
Yeah. I'm sure they're waiting with
bated breath. Wait, you could play Painter.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's perfect.
Anything to get Dad back in the saddle.
Aren't you the number one Painter player though, Quinn?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I could play Painter, and you could play something easy like Show.
Get the fuck out of here! You can't play Painter.
You know, if you play that mono green Painter list, there's very little risk of overlap.
I mean, except the Painter servants.
We got to switch off of this.
There's no overlap except the namesake card that you for sure want four of in your 75. Don't worry about it. And also Grindstone. Before we get to the next topic, Angel of the Winds is also a good Magic card name.
Pending. Maybe D&D set?
I think Angel of the Winds would be like...
Sounds white.
It's like a four mana value card. I think it's actually two blue-white. Flash, and when it enters the battlefield, you return target non-land permanent opponent controls with mana value two or less to their hand.
Just like a weird Flash mana war.
Yeah,
here's my entry. The winds. You know, probably not. You know, like, is it Gale Powder Mage? Nobody.
Oh
knows
yeah.
Does. Yeah, that would be like Angel of the Winds. You know,
yeah,
four mana 3/3 flyer that can like, you know, mess the stuff that's like blocked.
Mine would be a color shifted. What's that Arabian Nights 3/3 that hurricanes?
Oh,
it would be if, that color. It would be color shifted to, yeah,
if that's actually free, perfect,
but color shifted to white. White, and that would be Angel of the Winds.
Hire this man.
All right.
Would you have made Oko and given him those, like, would you have thought to elk your own shit?
Maybe. I don't know if I'm that galaxy brain though.
Okay. I think you're qualified.
Okay.
Speaking of new cards, things that may be overpowered, things that may be perfectly powered. There's a brand new meta. Things are wild right now. Things are both wild, and then I'm seeing the same cards a little, like, in a lot of lists. But
yeah,
I think needless to say, as far as like decks go, a lot of stuff got turned on its head.
Yeah, like I've always said, like, Modern Horizons set, or not Modern Horizons, Modern Masters is like, it's like
Horizons.
Three or four years of cards combined into one set and then just like released onto the world. So you get, you know, several design mistakes over 2 or 3 years, and then a bunch of really powerful stuff, and it trickles in. And, you know, instead of printing shit in Commander and stuff like that, they jam it all into one box and try to charge as much as humanly possible for it so that the good cards just spike ridiculously high in value, and we want them to just ban them so that they get cheap, which is just ridiculous. But It's nice to see that things haven't just totally blown up and degenerated. But yeah, we've got a whole new meta game, boys.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff.
Yeah. It seems fine. It's interesting seeing stuff shifted up. I like seeing some like green white depths really picking up. I think the deck's always been like pretty strong. It seems very good right now. I don't know. I'm getting monkeyed is just so bad. It feels so bad.
Before you negative Nancy us with your
I was gonna hold it back.
Your pirate monkey. I just wanna say that like the fact that friend of the show Colin, Rascal Yote, he has played Maverick forever, and then like when Oko and all this degenerate crap came out a few years ago, he kind of like migrated off of Maverick and slowly kind of went over to Depths, and then started innovating in the green white depth space, and then to like really have it become like a pretty high ranked deck, and it leverages one all of his sweet foil cards and beta cards for one, which is excellent. I think he just picked up his four foil old Border Knights recently.
Yeah, I just saw that in the shopping channel.
Yeah, so the fact that he's gotten to kind of like go down this road and not just had his Death and Taxes deck fall into disrepair and oblivion like some people, I think is really great. And the fact that this is a deck is great to see. Jeff,
mm-hmm.
We'll get to that. Get to that a little bit later.
Before we get into any of this stuff, how do you guys feel in general about things that like shake up the meta to this extent?
This is such a loaded question because I know you don't like change.
Well, I'll start then. I personally have a preference. Like, one of the things that drew me to Legacy was that you just like get this deck and you can get good with it. And you know, you're not going to be tier one all the time if you buy into a tier one deck. And like, there's a risk that at some point you might be like, it might be like, you know, like Pox, something will just like the bottom might fall out at some point. But there's like this longevity. And if you're an expert at any deck, you still have game. But I'm also not I'm in one person. So that's my personal opinion. I get the other side too. But I think the part that I've been thinking about that's like kind of interesting to me is that I think there's like a strong pull to to be a cardboard conservative, I guess. to resist change and like the old ways if you're playing in paper. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there is like something to be said about that, to be like, yes, like you have to buy these dual lands, but like don't worry, you might have to buy like a play set of cards every year because a new thing comes out, and then half the time you don't even use them. And it's like, yes, there's a huge cost of Legacy, but like you're good.
Right. A little
upkeep. Whereas if you're primarily a Magic Online player, especially if you're the type of grinder that plays some of these people play a lot of Magic, then I can see how it gets stale. Especially a format like Legacy, like Standard rotates. That's the whole pull of Standard, right? Is that like, if it gets boring, you can stop playing for a month and come back to Standard. And that, to me, has been something that's been really interesting when people are like, oh, the Legacy metagame stale. And I'm like, seems normal to me. Play like once a week now during COVID, 1 to 2 times a week, you know? And like, I don't play online and I like pick up my deck box and take it to the store. And I think that's a really interesting tension that might be something a lot of people are going to explore a little more when like paper comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I definitely agree that playing Magic online is playing Magic in dog years. Like, where 1 year is 7 years or whatever it is. Like, both in terms of like increasing your skill level and just becoming a better player. If you want to do that, Magic online or Arena is a great place to do that, because when you misclick your Thespian stage, copying your own Thespian stage, it's which Jeff just did. It's very punishing and you never do it again. Whereas in paper, you kind of have that, ooh, never mind. Like, one, you don't even do it. But like, two, there's like the take backsies, which you don't kind of learn as quickly. But so there's the learning component, but I definitely agree that because you can play so many games, like if you think about it, you have to like drive your car or catch the bus or whatever you're going to do to get to the event. You're going to play in the event. You're going to be waiting in between rounds, and then you're going to have to get home. And it's like, you could have played 2 or 3 times the amount of Magic online by doing that. So again, it goes back to that, like, get stale quickly. So if you don't like something, or if something is popular that you don't agree with, I could see someone feeling pretty disingenuous pretty quickly. Whereas us who don't play at the same like frequency, we play in more like normal person years. It feels great because you think about the deck you want to play for a week or two, you play it, you have some fun, and then you tweak it a little bit, you play it and you have some fun. And meanwhile, someone's played 250 games with their deck and you're like, okay.
You so, can't compete with the hyperbolic time chamber.
Exactly.
I think it is more, just as an aside, I think it's more reps than I think reps, playing reps and being able to play reps is what makes you a better player if you play Magic online. Like, yes, there, because the thing, you know, example you brought up where like, you know, you get punished for this thing, you'll never do it again. It's like, well, Jeff like misclicked, like he knew what he wanted to do. And I actually think it's a lot of decks are easier to play online.
Yeah.
I think the competition is can be on the whole, like probably like slightly more difficult depending on where you live, if not a lot more difficult. but like you can't miss triggers.
Yep.
Also,
I'm not gonna argue with you there.
It's missing the most skillful part of Magic, of Legacy anyways, which is to like lick your opponent in the face, kind of look to the side, look down your hand, be like, yeah, just end step. No, sorry, that's fine. Actually, no, end step will just brainstorm when they have a chalice in play and then just stone face it and wait for them to be like, yeah, okay, and then pick up three cards.
They need to implement chalice checking on Magic Online.
Yeah, it's like you can go into that settings and like put the miracle trigger on the miracles mode, and then there's also like chalice check mode.
What, where you check if you want, if you you want the capability to say maybe to your opponent's spells in your chalice?
my all-time best, which didn't work, was just stone dead on the crackback. So I'm like, I guess I'll just attack with Blighted Agent. Like, okay, I'm like, I'm gonna invigorate whole priority, I'll put a vines on the stack, and they're like, yeah, the chalice on the vines. I'm like, okay, cool. Invigorate, like invigorate resolves. I'm like, okay, I'll berserk. And it's like chalice. I'm like, you got it.
I always like people trying to chalice check a Sanctum Prelate, and you're like, no, you can't.
You just can't do that.
And you're it's not even like a trick. You just cannot. You're just saying words, floating mana, and showing me a magic card. Like,
this card's been written properly. Sorry.
So not too recently, or not too long ago, Andrea Mangucci.
One of the two. In the recent future or the distant past.
Mangucci released a June update for Legacy Power Rankings. Power Rankings is always a little bit of a weird term. I like the tiers better, but they had listed 10 decks that were kind of like, you know, top contenders in the metagame. And when I kind of went through it, it felt like the almost like the looking at MTG Goldfish or what's been performing in like two or three challenges and just saying, well, there's the top decks. And not really, it didn't feel like too much of an in-depth analysis, but the decks in order / no particular order were Blue Red Delver, Bant Miracles, Doomsday, Sneak and Show, Hogak, Elves, Moon Stompy, and Selesnya Reclaimer. And then closing it out, you had Golgari Depths and Mono Green Cloud Post.
Selesnya Reclaimer. Oh.
Yeah, I know. It felt terrible name. What do we want
also
to call it?
As a legacy conservative, I would also want it to be named after a cartoon that no one watches.
Or possibly a breakfast cereal.
Sonic Youth song. Yeah, something.
So again, I think that was just like the looking at Saturday, Sunday results and just saying, okay, here's decks that are good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even know if Sneak and Show is actually like really good or if it's just JPA put up two or three results with it and therefore it's now qualified as a top tier deck.
Sneak and Show constantly S tier.
There are people who we don't like aren't JPA or Snoopy Magic, and there's also Snoopy Magic. I think it's real if you know how to play it.
It's just one of those decks that, I mean, honestly, like Green White Depths on this list, where it's just like the thing it's doing is just so powerful as a whole that, you know, you can just kind of shove it in whatever format.
And I think that's the thing, is that like no one's gunning for it right now. And as the power level of the format increases, it's still powerful enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like Reanimator is also just fits that statement, except now like people like main decking Endurance
everywhere.
It's just everyone's shuffling your graveyard into your library, so you should put an Emrakul in play instead of get Grizzle Brand out of your yard.
Yep.
Notably, so that was the first one, and I kind of wanted to compare and contrast to another one that came out recently, and I think these kind of results are really helpful in terms of giving people a bit of a bellwether and how the format's doing, especially when like either one, they haven't gotten back to paper and they're a paper only player, or they only play a little bit of Magic Online every once in a while. Both of which I kind of check the boxes on, but this was, who was it? Matthew. This was Achilles, right?
No, it's Ozymandias.
Ozymandias.
Yeah.
So he did a great little primer, and he, basically said after 4 weeks, he's been playing a lot. He's one of the people who plays in dog years. And he put it into my preferred method of S tier, A tier, B, C, and D. And when I read through them, like it sounded very correct to me when I kind of saw the rankings. And just to quickly go through them, we had at S tier, so being the best, Jeskai Ragavan Saga.
See, this desperately needs a new deck name.
Yeah,
calling something like the next deck Bant Control.
Let's put a parking lot pin in that one for just a minute, Jeff. Bant Control, Green White Depths were the S tiers. A tiers, we had Blue Red Delver. So interestingly, like quite a bit lower than Mangucci's. Also, Doomsday, Stink and Show, Elves, Red Prison, almost in the same order. B tier, this is your tier, Jeff. We have Death and Taxes, Hogak, Green Reclaimer, Cloud Post, Karn Artifact Variants, and then rounding out the bottom for C, this... Omnitel, Esper Vial.
I was going to say, is this your tier? But this is also my tier.
This is my tier. We got Esper Vial, Lands, Painter Variants, Maverick, Affinity Variants. Interesting to see Affinity so low after kind of, you know, initial hype. And D tier, we have Storm Variants, which is scary. Reanimator and other graveyard decks. I think this is the endurance effect. And then basically everything else. I love that language. Quinn, what are your thoughts?
I don't think I have...
who hates change.
Oh, I mean... I think the overall effect's like a different conversation. As far as like these lists go, I would certainly like look to these two before I try to argue. You know, like it may sound like I have uninformed opinions, and that's because I'm stupid, but I do know that I don't know enough to argue with this. And I mean, from what I've observed, it makes sense too. Mm-hmm. I think if you're talking about comparing and contrasting, like having like the Ragavan Saga pile is something that I think like Mangu overlooked. Yeah. But I don't know when he actually like sent that article to his editor.
My
pretty recent.
My initial kind of take with it when I saw the two kind of comparisons is I felt that like Mangu had an article that he was supposed to write and he's like, I'm going to do this. And I don't want to say like mailed it in, but
I'm going to, cop changed a bit so it doesn't look like a copy. Does that
but he did saying? he did research, but he didn't play 50 or 60 games of Legacy. I think that makes the sense. Conclusion.
But the article was posted before Matthew posted his list, and they're pretty similar. It's like, I mean, we'd have to like cherry pick two of the decks out of like the B tier for him, but it's like 8 out of 10.
I think McBain just likes the SA tier.
Yeah, that's clearly my bias. You got it.
Yeah. No, but the SA tier, like all those decks except for the Ragavan pile, right, are on Minkuchi's list.
No, I meant he's just biased to the format.
Oh.
Yeah. he could have lands at the top, and I wouldn't be biased by that. But like S tier, I'm like, oh yeah, please, more.
Yeah, Painter down in the C tier, and this man doesn't care. I know we've used Cats in the Cradle as like a intro song already, so I can't do it again, but that's what I'm thinking of right now.
So who would have thought if you went back, you know, I don't know, in the last 4 years, even if somebody told you that a deck that played sometimes multiple copies of Standstill was the top of the S tier, would you have ever?
Never. Never in a million years. I think you would say Legacy is a very proactive format and it's low to the ground, low CMCs. People are playing things and you can't afford to just like play a standstill because often you'll just be behind. Like on the Quadrant Theory thing, you're screwed every time. Like I don't think that I would have ever put money down on that bet.
I don't want to say that I'm smart enough to have predicted it, but I don't think that's as outlandish as it seems on the surface. Like, McBain, I get what you're saying. Like, you know, when you tap out for a standstill and then, like, your opponent flashes something in response, you're like, oh, no. But I don't think, especially considering the way cards have been designed lately, that they would just, like, tack something on a land, you know, that's finally strong enough. That's always been the thing about landstill decks, right? It's like, well, and then you're attacking with like a what's the fairy thing?
Fairy Conclave.
Fairy Conclave. Yeah. Or like, why can't I remember any?
My personal favorite, Treetop Village, is Treetop my personal Village. Favorite. What's
the blue black one that's unblocked?
Creeping Tar Pit.
Why can I not think of it? Anyways, it like all those things are like they got the job done, but like, you know, people were playing like Myth Realized and stuff like that. But it was like only a matter of time the way things have been going until I don't think they intended to get you two constructs out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But even one in a standstill show might have been good enough.
But and just putting like a, you know, value artifact into play.
Yeah. Well, no, it goes into your hand.
A curse.
Oh, does it go to your hand? Well, I don't even know what the card does.
A curse scroll. Come on.
That, yeah. Okay. Like we go back in time. I tell you a deck in 2021 is playing Standstill Stifle Curse Scroll. You'd be like, what is happening?
I think the Curse Scroll thing, I don't like, I love, when I saw that, I was also like, yes, that's going to be a thing where if there's no more shakeups of the format in like 3 weeks, people are going to be like, yeah, we dropped Curse Scroll, obviously.
I want to see like, oh, a so situation sad. Where like you're at two life, your opponent has a Curse Scroll and they have a Standstill out. And they curse scroll you with like one card in hand, so you have to break the standstill so you have a better chance of living.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, I'm like, I love the anti synergy between standstill and curse scroll.
I would simply die before I let them draw those cards.
That's like not quite the equivalent of like the Nassif Pat Chapin Ignite Memories, but it's, you know, in the universe of it.
Ignite Memories is like the sickest storm card. More cards, I remember watching that possible like, chance of failing
when they streamed, like when it was being streamed live, I was watching that. I was like, this is insane. anyway, so I just wanted to talk briefly about the Bant control deck. And like, to me, this just, as soon as I saw the endurance card and the prismatic ending, it was kind of just like, okay, I guess Jeskai control is gone forever. And we're just going to be in this Bant control world. And the fact that it really kind of is evident in Ozymandias' list here, where he's got at the bottom Storm Variants and Reanimator and other graveyard decks, like it's just like punched them in the gut and throwing them to the bottom. And then in addition to having like little things like Ragavan and stuff like that, like personally, I always like to see Storm kind of a contender.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a sweet deck. And although if I had to choose, Doomsday is kind of cooler. But
I don't think it is like anymore.
Bant control is like, I think it's just like here to stay at this point. It's such a solid list and you have so much flexibility in terms of what you want to do.
It's just the pile of insanely powerful cards that are good in almost every situation.
I think it like, it's just like less, I've like dabbled in decks like this. I'm not good at it. But the thing that would excite me was that it always felt like it kind of, I think it's like kind of that Rug Delver thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like playing old mirror, even like top miracles, you know, especially if you were like me and you're really self-conscious, but not wanting to top multiple times and being like, fuck, I'm sorry, I'm stupid. I'm going to just activate top again. Very, very sorry. And trying to play at a reasonable pace. And it always felt like you're on this knife's edge. And now it's just like, you have so many cards that just catch you up. Mm-hmm. If you make a mistake.
But
I think that's what makes the deck good though, because if you pile on top of that someone like Dylan who's not interested in playing this either, because I think the thrill for him is maybe diminished a bit. But if you had a really good pilot, then it's like, oh yeah, like how do you stop me? You know, like I'm not gonna make a mistake. I know the format inside out. I'm gonna counter the right things. And I know that if I make like, you know, one screw up over like three rounds and I'm going to get like draw my prismatic ending or cantrip into it. And then I can like destroy whatever it was. That's the catch all. And like, that's the thing that changes the power level of the cards you're playing. There's so much less air,
mm-hmm.
even though there's like abundant harvests and ponders and brainstorms.
Yeah. And there's like,
when you hit a payoff though, you know, like, it's like, look at this thing and you're like, I think, a lot of times in the past, there was like an argument over like someone resolves a Jace and you're like, shit, am I dead? And it's like, it was always close or a maybe, or yes, you were, you know, like here it's like you don't play the Jace until things are well under control, and then it's just kind of like a do we need to keep doing this, you know, like there's a Earl in the yard and a Jace on the board and endurance over here, and like you don't know it, but I'm holding like an Ice Fang Quaddle. If you manage to get something and stick it,
I think this is a perfect balance. Like I think having a really good actual control-y deck is really good. Like, although this does have a bit of a hyper mid-range feel to it, I'd still put it in the control field. The fact that you're getting like Jace is coming back into the healing into nature, and cards like Endurance that kind of like shave or catch up on a lot of matchups. I don't know. I just really like it. And I would take this a million times over any of those like snow decks that was just like snow into Oko into Uro. Like, get that hell out of here.
I would take Endurance over Oko. You're right. If we're swapping three drops, 100%.
Yeah. And then before that, like you didn't really have a good Miracles deck for a number of years. Like ever since, what would it have been? Like almost like Modern Horizons 1. Like at that point, like things really started to shift and it just became a Delver world. So to have this come back, I think it's kind of, there's, I don't want to say like a pillar of the format has returned, blah, blah, blah. But it does, like we play like, some of our best legacy that we can remember, I would say, is like 2015, 2016, when Top Miracles was reigning supreme. And it was a fantastic deck. And this just feels like a newer kind of different version of that. And you still have all these cantrips.
This feels like Top Miracles.
I'm not saying
it's so much more proactive, and that's the change. And again, I think I 100% agree. It's good that there's like a, like if Delver's the police, it's good that someone's watching the police. There's police oversight, something that we lack sometimes in the real world. And this is police oversight, but it's, to me anyways, and obviously there's some personal bias here, you know, like old, like grindy Miracles was like a, like, yes, we have some police oversight and they also have control. And this is like, the police are out of control. Send Judge Dredd to get the police. And like, that's this deck, you know? Which is fine. That's just how like Magic cards are more powerful now, right?
So I'm a fan. I'm glad Bant controls the thing. And now Dylan can finally do what he's always wanted to do for years. I'm going to pause to let him think about what he's been wanting to do. And that's play Sylvan Library in his control deck. He's been wanting to do it forever. He keeps on thinking about it and it just never has been a thing. And now he has an opportunity to play Sylvan Library. So
I remember, I think the first time we went to Eternal Weekend, just me and Dylan talking about Bant Miracles and how can we make Bant Miracles because he wants to play Sylvan. And we were going through all the things you could do of like, you could play Ground Seal to stop all these other things from going on. And we were looking at like, instead of Snapcasters, you can play, what's that awful Mission Briefing?
Yeah, he was all about, he bought a bunch of Mission Briefings.
But the thing is, it worked with Ground Seal because he didn't have the target. So God, it was perfect.
But in the worst kind of way.
I feel like this is, you know, it's strong, but I'll be curious to see if it does tickle his, you know, control feelings and if he has a good time with this. Because it feels like kind of the spirit of a lot of it's gone, you know?
That's what I was going to say. And as a preemptive, that's gas. Dylan, always gas. Whenever he gets around to listening to the show, we'll message us together to be like with his thoughts. And so I am actually like, I'm glad you called him up by name, McBain, because we're gonna find out before next episode,
yeah,
what he thinks about this.
It's topic. Almost like a live tweeting response as he's listening.
Yeah, he's been like sub podcasted.
Yeah. So the final thing that I'll be looking for a response on, Dylan, is: are you in the Portent camp or the Abundant Harvest camp? And I think we can leave that there.
About Abundant Harvest, though, I think Anorog posted something on Twitter at this point, probably like 2-3 weeks ago, even longer. But it was just a screenshot.
Like 18 years in dog years. Like
it was like a screenshot of like a turn to like Abundant Harvest, like to find a land, and it went through like 27 cards.
Oh my God.
It's like only Abundant Harvest can do this.
That was a somewhat doctored image. I don't know. I remember seeing someone like commenting of like, well, then how did you hit like five Jaces in your deck or something?
Like something. I can tell by the way the pixels are. This has been photoshopped.
Yeah, yeah. There. Well, I don't know. Something had happened in the game that it wasn't just like a turn two thing. But
MTGO deepfakes.
Anyway.
On Abundant Harvest, and on the note of like how this deck has changed, I think in Old Miracles, Portent might be better. One, because you're setting up Terminus, which this deck doesn't play. And two, because you really need to find a specific answer. Whereas I think now with like the power level of the pieces you're playing just generically being like higher, it's like in the early game I want to land, and in the late game I need action. And so I think that's where Abundant Harvest comes in, like in like this list that we're looking at, like replaces that.
Yep. Yeah, I'm actually more drawn to the fifth place list. Kihira Works from last Sunday, the 29th. And they had three Portent and three Terminus in their deck. And they were more on the a little bit more of a control-y version rather than what Mengucci has in here. So like no engineered explosives and things like that.
A fellow conservative.
And I think that would be more in the Petter realm of things. But yeah, I'm just super excited to have like a top tier. It feels very 2015, 2016. Not like I want Mentor and top kind of bullshit, but like kind of that more 2013, 2014, like nascent Miracles where there was like a few different builds of it and you never quite knew exactly what the 75 was, but it was a good deck and always performed. People could play it nonstop and still have fun games. Like I think it's finally gotten back. Like after Top was banned, Anurag went on like a journey for a year until he settled on Snow and like polluted his soul. And then that got banned. So I think hopefully he's happy with where he's returned to.
Do you not think this is more like Snow than it is what you're describing?
I'd say it's more like the early days Miracle stuff.
I think when I think of it, and like Jace is in this list, but I don't think, I guess a resolve Jace is still potentially a finisher, but I look at these other cards and it's not like, you're not dead when Uro goes in the graveyard and you're not dead when like Endurance 2 for Wenzu. But I think yeah, was like the old play style was like I'm gonna like, it's kind of like, you know, the jujitsu match, like we're gonna fight, and when you get tired enough I'm gonna choke you unconscious, and that's when I flip, like, you know, I cycle tops and suddenly there's 100 monks or there's eight angels, you know, end of turn. And that's a lot different, right? You're playing threats to the board and you're getting like incremental value, which is what makes it more mid-rangey. I think this is a lot more like the Snow deck, which I mean, it's still enjoyable, right? But it's a lot different than like the hammer comes down. And by the time the hammer comes down, you're already dead.
I think the big difference for me is the absence of Snapcaster. For like 6 years, Snapcaster was a mainstay in the Miracles deck, and it defined how the deck functioned. And all
simultaneously, I'm nostalgic for that, but also like, fuck, when you have like your top decking and your Miracles opponent has like six cards and they're beating you down to one Snapcaster, and you're like,
I know, God. that's what it. I wanted to like say, to like let you relive, to be like, right, that was a thing.
No, that rules.
But that's also like when you win games like that, you're like, I'm the greatest Magic player of all time. Like, I have all the cards, you have zero cards, I'm beating you down to 2-1 Ambush Viper. It's just like so demoralizing.
Yeah, and now it'll just be a 3-4 Endurance. Yeah. Were there in Ozymandias's list here, was there any other ones that you kind of want to call out, Jeff, that really stand out to you?
Not really. I mean, the most interesting thing on here is the Jeskai Ragavan Saga, which is like probably the most interesting deck I don't want to play.
Sounds like some like anti-beer commercial or something.
Yeah.
I was zoned out for a while you guys were talking. Right after Jeff, you said, this needs a better name.
Yeah.
And the best thing I could come up with was there's a Curious George book called Curious George Gets a Medal.
Okay.
And that's like the, get it?
Yeah, okay.
Curious George Gets a Medal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the monkey gets a shiny thing.
It works. Monty,
no, I actually really like it. I think that's really clever.
We should also bring back, in addition to obscure legacy names, just really long legacy names. I think that's a good idea.
Is there one that comes to mind, Jeff?
No, I mean, Curious George gets a medal. Like, you know, what if we just moved everything to like 5 or 6 word names?
And to make it longer, I think for inclusivity, it should be like Jessica Raghavan Saga in brackets. You know, it's like Tin Fins. Tin Fins should, you know, because people are like, what is Tin Fins? I don't understand. Like, that's so frustrating if you're new. And it's like Tin Fins. It's like, you know, like instant Grizzle Brand reanimator combo. Like, great. You get it. But the names are so sweet.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's a really cool deck. I'm scared to play against it.
I actually haven't even seen it online as I've been playing.
No one can rent the cards.
It's true. I mean, there was a Pleasant Kenobi video he made recently about just the like cost of cards. Like Blue Red Delver on Magic Online right now is like 1,000 tickets, and like half of that is in Ragavans. It's nuts.
Well, you've got this really weird economy where the rental services are having to try to supply the cards to their customers. So they're just having to buy up cards. And it's gotten to the point now where they've stopped allowing new services. Because if I wanted to play online right now and play with Ragavans, I would go and get a rental service because it hedges against the downside risk of them plunging in value.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like economics 101 in my mind. But like to have these businesses say, we are not going to accept new customers anymore because all we're doing is like chasing our own tail, monkey tail, pun intended, but chasing our own tail.
God,
I didn't get an immediate laugh there, Jeff. So
it's the heat. It's not you. Don't worry.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. But like chasing our own tail in terms of like driving up prices on our own, like it's their own bots fight, their own cyber claw bots fighting each other.
Right. There's like a mandatory demand, even if nobody's individually looking for the cards.
Yeah. To have them say, this is dumb, we're going to stop, like really demonstrates that there's a big problem here in terms of how supply kind of comes on the market. I don't know how you fix that, but or like address it or ameliorate it or use some other big word to like simplify the situation, but it's a problem.
Extreme sidebar conversation, I think is way too much to like talk about right now, but it probably just an argument that Modern Horizons and those sets shouldn't be premium prices on Magic Online.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Let's find, I think the power listings are good. I think that it's pretty accurate, especially from what I've seen.
Motherfucking standstill.
I'm like moderately interested in playing Legacy Online right now.
I think the number one naysayer. I think it's really interesting to like explore the new format.
Mm-hmm.
I like when we talk about stuff here and we talk about like, I think McBain sometimes pushes us to be like, is it better? And I'm always like vehemently like, no. And I do believe that. But I think like if I had a rental service and also I could get the cards I wanted, I'd be like, yeah, I want to try this deck. There's a lot of like crazy decks that Saga opens up.
Saga's a goofy card.
Saga's interesting because I don't think it's bannable, but it's just going to go in so many decks.
It does fit the kind of spot where it's very easy to include in something and then to include the package with it.
Yeah.
Which is a tough spot because like you said, I don't think it's bannable, but it does put it in that spot where it's just like consistently annoying and close.
Yeah, it's like generically powerful. And I think that's where like Ragavan fits in. It's actually like, and also as someone who often criticizes, like just not criticize the wrong word, shits on WotC sometimes unfairly and a little too harshly. It's like hard to balance power. And I think it's just like, it's unfortunate, but also if you're trying to make cards that are playable in Eternal formats, which is, I think the kind of question is whether they should do that or not, is the bigger question. If they're going to do it, it's understandable that they're going to like have some cards that you're like Cabal Therapist, you know, like, I bet you thought this was going to be good. This card sucks. That's fine.
you know, the bigger problem is
like Ragavan and Saga, they just kind of like fit everywhere, you know?
Right. The I think that's unfortunate because they're so small.
Yeah. But there's a lot of interesting things outside of that. Like, I think even though it's very powerful, I think like Dragon Rage Channel is like a super cool card.
Yeah. My bigger problem with Saga is the further rise of Retrofitter Foundry, because I fucking hate playing this Retrofitter Foundry.
Oh man, have and you played with one though?
So many decks as like a one of now is so annoying.
It only gets fun when you get two going.
It's still so good with one. Like against so many decks, it's all you have to do is you just, all right, I'm going to do this and I'm going to keep drawing cards.
We played, I don't know, probably like a month or two ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't really played Ninjas Against DNT, you know, like I'm still like, this is good, but the dog ears thing, very slowly trying to learn that deck properly. And I remember I just got two into play and you're like scooped. And I was like, well, we're not like, I don't know. You have a good board presence. And you're like, no, man, I'm just dead. And I'm like, kind of looking at it. I'm like, yeah, I guess. Now that I think about it, I guess you are.
Yep.
But it just seems innocuous until you start doing shit with them. And it's not.
Yeah, the one thing about the sagas and standstill, maybe not so much Ragavan, but like endurance is kind of in this camp as well, is I feel it kind of slows the game down a little bit more. Again, I'm looking at Ozymandias's tier list. Tears. Nice. And you've got Storm and Reanimator and stuff at the bottom. And you're kind of, and like Doomsday, it can go fast, but it's kind of more of like a, I was going to use some old vintage term, but it's a slower combo deck. It generally kind of like sculpts the win and then does it. And it's more deterministic than not.
It's an Everflame, not a firework. Duraflame, that's the one.
I think Dooms is resilient because it has counter magic.
Mm-hmm.
And discard.
Ants is a deck similar to, I think, Infect, where people remember when they got like turn two by Infect. People remember when they got like turn one by Storm.
Yeah, they played James Johnson.
People do not remember. Well, I mean, but that's what I'm saying, right? You remember every time James like turn one to you. You don't remember when, well, he does like duress you two turns in a row, and then like you're like, oh, he's at two, and then all of a sudden he's like, Dark Ritual, is that resolve? And you're like, days, and he's like, okay, pass. And you're like, all right, I got him. He's down to one. And then you pass back and all of a sudden things happen, right? Like, I think Ant is a deck where you grind until you cannot grind, unless it's like obvious that you have it. Versus like Tess, where it's like you're going, you know? And I think Doomsday has more counterplay, which like, because it has counter magic. But I think it's the slow decks that are suffering. The decks that have to like set up versus like oops all spells. Like, yes, I'm going to oops all spells and maybe you're going to get me with an endurance because you have it in your hand right now. But like Ant's not a force check deck. Like Ant checks to see if you have force. I think it's unfortunate that like those decks that exist were like, you know, again, like you might remember that you got turn one by Ant, but usually you played a game. More often than not, right? And those are the decks that are getting pushed out, because what is happening is like a card like Ragavan slows down the like outcome of the game, but doesn't slow the, like it slows down like when the game actually ends because someone scoops up their cards, but it actually like speeds up the outcome for like when you were actually dead. That happened on like turn one or turn two when you got hit by the monkey.
And they took your tendrils.
Well, your tendrils, yes. they took your ponder and you were going to like fix your hand, you know?
Or yeah, like, something I want to put like the Ragavan aside, but I think like things like Saga, which has to actually take turns to trigger, or Standstill, which has to take turns to trigger, and those are all things that inherently slow the format down, which is generally not an awful thing. Anytime that like decks are incentivized to go faster and go under in like a turn one, and like Eric Lannon's running around with all the trophies in the world with green black reanimator or red black reanimator, like I don't think that that's a super fun and enjoyable time, especially when we have paper magic returning. Like we want to have I want to have matches that go to time every time because I'm so damn slow, but I think everyone wants to play like good Magic and play like, you know, 40, 50 minutes of Magic each town. So I'm kind of happy for that. But again, I think the big one here that stands out to me is the Blue Red Delver. I don't know why I'm getting my colors confused, but the Blue Red Delver deck is the one that's like very go for the throat. And I have no idea what Jeff is doing.
I think
I'm hot. There's a fan. I'm trying to get it.
Just opening his shirt up and like showing us. No,
that's for the rest of the Patreon.
I think like one, I don't agree that it's just better if there's like, I think there should be a variety of decks in Legacy. I think
that's,
this is an improvement.
Controversial.
This is an improvement on the Oko era where it was like turbo everything, you know, like just get under Oko and then you can win still. That was bad. You know, like I think if like, I'm glad Oops exists as a deck. I think if it becomes like the number one combo deck, we got a fucking problem. You know, that's a little bit too fast for my liking. I don't think if you play that deck, more power to you. Sometimes you get got by Oops, and that's why it's cool that it's there.
Endurance, baby.
But I think like all of the, like the format is slowing down because yes, maybe like you're not getting like the turn zero decks anymore. But all of the decks that used to have to like fight through stuff and then like, you know, the reason Delver is good because it clocks you at a reasonable pace and it has counterplay. And that's how it has game against Ant, for example. Like that was the antidote to Ad Nauseam Tendrils, is that I have a flip Delver and I have Daze and you're playing around Daze and then I forcibly you. You know, like that to me is a lot more interesting than if suddenly the Delver clock speeds up. And then it pushes Ant out of the meta. Or, you know, before when you're playing against like Miracles as an example, like as an Infect player, Infect versus top Miracles, like of the both of those eras, maybe minus I would happily get rid of like Ataxian Probe on my side. Those are like my favorite games of like all time playing Legacy. Because it was yes, I have like I'm a combo deck, but there's like a grind and things are happening, and it's not like, oh, like are you flashing this like 3/4 out of nowhere? You know, like I don't know. I don't think like games are necessarily becoming more interactive just because more turns are happening on average. Like I think Legacy has become less interactive and more proactive. And if that's I just hate playing mid-range, so and that's my bias. So if you like that, then I bet you're having a great time. But I think games have become a lot more mid-rangey, mm-hmm. and it's pushed out, you know, true control decks and like combo decks. And when those, my favorite thing is when those two things had to play against each other.
On a totally unrelated note, have you seen some of these mono red lists? These mono red stompy lists.
They go so fast now. Fireflex
Squad.
Yeah.
The Fireflex Squad, the Four Furies.
Oh, yeah.
It's four Scat Shatter Skull Smashing. You got the Bone Crusher Giants. I'm just going to read the rest here. Rabble Master, War Boss, Spirit Guide, Chalice, Chromox, Trinisphere, Blood Moon, and Lands. That is like the tightest condensed package of death that I think I've seen out of that thing in a while. And I know there's probably like the Nathan's probably got several different versions of it, but that's terrifying. And it's
very condensed.
It's 4/4/4/4/4/4/4/4/4/4. Like it's man, when I started playing Legacy, like I was kind of sort of drawn to what was at the time called Dragon Stompy. Strictly because it played four Chalice and four Blood Moon, and I was like, "Ooh, yeah, this is my style." But this is
Red Prison is a good example of like what I'm trying to get at too, where like the weakness of it was always like you drew the wrong half of your deck. There's not enough threats. The threats aren't good enough, and so you know you've only locked out someone for so long, and then they catch up. And now it just closes the game really fast. So same kind of thing. If this deck becomes good and pushes out a deck like Tess, like average turns per tournament may go down. But I don't like, it's just like certain games were over before they started, right? It's so hard to like come back from like when you don't have Force of Will. I don't actually, maybe I'm wrong. Jeff, how are you feeling as a non-blue player when you play against like Prison? A non-blue player who doesn't play.
Oh, I love it. It's great. It's a good matchup.
Like still?
I mean, I haven't played against it for a while. The clock's faster now. The clock's faster, but you do have a lot of stuff. Like, you don't care about Blood Moon for the most part. You have a lot of stuff that deals with everything else. You have ways to like get rid of Chalice or like make it irrelevant.
A four Fury now.
Fury is a big one. I haven't played against this with a Fury. That seems miserable.
I do love how like whenever there's like a new commander set, there's some random red card, and you're like, this card's kind of cool for commander. It's not really playable anywhere else. And then someone taught like at least
Basuda.
League. Yeah, where you're like, huh. So you put that card in a giant. Holy shit, that's good.
I was for some reason thinking of Mad Max Fury Road, where this the guy like spray painting his mouth. He's like, for Valhalla. Like, that's what Fury's doing against your DNT deck. You're like, oh, here's my summoning sick mom and my Thalion. It's like, Valhalla. It's
like, Fury's eradicate your board. A great addition for that deck. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the DNT matchup be pretty bad now.
Fury and Shatter Skull Smashing. Where you're just like, sure, I'll take three.
Or especially at least it's like, you know, okay, if you're gonna cast it and like two, you know, get two things, takes a bunch of mana to like Thalia or whatever, it's hard. But Fury is just like you.
The fact that all these cards dodge Thalia is like very interesting.
And you can also just like Fireflux like into Fury, which is gross. Like it's not always pitching it yourself. And it's one of the few cards of the cycle that's like, you know, you could like four for two or something. Like you can trade kind of on more real cards than most of the other ones.
This is like not good, but I want to do it so badly. Is to attack with like a Ilharg the Raze Spore and then put a Fury into play and then be able to like buy it back to my hand. That's like,
oh yeah.
Obviously putting in an Emmy probably just ends the game instead. But just like the It's kind of like getting hit with like a Ambush Viper. It's just so demoralizing. You know, if you're like, I just put this in, wipe your board, go.
That seems great.
So Jeff, last time we talked, we were doing some counseling and we were kind of talking about like different ways you could explore the beautiful legacy format that wasn't with kind of bad white cards that you've come to hold dear. And we kind of discussed a few different options. For some reason, Quinn and I both immediately kind of thought of Sneak and Show. And I'm just kind of curious, like, how has your adventure been going?
So, like true counseling, I put off doing anything that we talked about until the next session was coming up.
Listen, I just put the money into some natural wine, had a nice night at home, drank the bottle of wine.
I'm a little tied up in dog coins right now. Your payment will have to wait. So we talked about this a bit offline too. And I ended up not playing Sneak and Show as somewhat of an act of rebellion. The first thing that I played a few matches with was the Red-Black Madness deck that's going around. It's kind of an easing into something else. But I figured I don't have to think too much. And you know, I still get a different palate cleansing experience.
Is this deck good?
There's been different levels of success with it. I know Phil Gallagher, I think he 5-0'd with one of the lists, and it's popped up in some of the tournaments. I think overall the deck isn't good. I think it has the capability to be good, but you're giving up a lot. Like it's extremely random a lot of the times.
Yeah, I asked that, and I'm sure people listening might have been like, just say it's not good, asshole. But I'm like, this is genuine. That was genuine. It wasn't rhetorical. I'm like, is this good?
Because like you can win a lot of games. Like sometimes, you know, you start the game and you either like Burning Inquiry and discard like three or like two Root Wallows and like an Anger or something. Or like, you know, then you have some hollow ones you can cast. And like all of a sudden you have like 10 power on the board of haste by like turn two. And you win those games. It's good. And then other games you just like do nothing. What's interesting is that it's kind of difficult to hate out. Like graveyard hate doesn't really matter because like it stops Vengevine, but it doesn't actually stop any of the madness stuff. what I ended up losing to the most when I was playing it was honestly just like Tabernacle. I played against a bunch of lands, and the deck is not very happy with Tabernacle, but I've never, I don't know, the last time I activated this many Basking Rootwallas was like 10 years ago. Oh, like I probably activated Basking Rootwalla like maybe 12 times in like two leagues of the deck. And it feels so good.
This deck look, I kind of want to like, what, Vengevine is that expensive?
It's, yeah, you need, you have LEDs.
I need a second Taiga.
Yeah. So I played one list first, which is the first list that I grabbed, and it plays such hits as Kitchen Imps, which is the Modern Horizons 2/2 with haste and flying that you can Madness 1 black.
I like how you said such hits. Kitchen Imp is like a BTS B-side.
All right.
Okay, sorry, that was... Wow. I thought, like, you're the youngest guy in the cast. I thought maybe that would resonate.
I'm not, like, a Zoomer.
Yep. Anyways. Okay, sorry.
I would recommend not playing the list of the kitchen imps. The consistency is a lot worse, and you know, adding another madness guy that you actually have to cast doesn't feel good. But the other list, which plays Once Upon a Time, is much better. You have consistency from going Once Upon a Time, and you can like keep, you know, one or no land hands pretty easily. And in both of them, honestly, Angie's Ravager is just nuts. Like, you were just talking, Quinn, about like commander decks, there's a red card, you're like, oh, maybe that's playable. Like, turn one, you get a hand that's like LED, Angie's Ravager, and like a Rootwalla, and maybe like an Anger or like a Vengevine or something, and you can just dump like it all on the board, attack for haste and draw cards. Like, it's very good.
Yeah, it's, I almost guess LED, almost if looks... you can dump your hand
mm-hmm.
and then immediately draw three cards is not the worst.
But and dumping your hand means that you can pay for the madness on Angie's Ravager, and you can, like, you know, cast your Rootwallas.
That seems insane.
Yeah.
This almost feels like, oh my god, there's three Angers in this deck.
It's good.
Well, again, if you're triggering the Ravager right away off an Anger, like, it's just like, go.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, this almost feels like Cyberclaw 2.0.
It really does a little bit. Like, a lot of it is just decided on your hand. And, you know, sometimes you spin the wheel like you would with Cyberclaw and, you know, you get nothing. And sometimes you get crazy, crazy stuff. But, like, because of Madness, you can cast it instant speed, too. You can just, like, you know, so you don't have an Anger, you can just, like, roll out, like, an LED or even, like, a Putrid Imp or something. And then, like, end of their turn, start, like, pitching stuff to, like, put into play
with Madness. So are you supposed to, like, say you have, like, a hand, it's, like, LED land... Ravager, you're supposed mm-hmm. to EOT it, right, on their turn?
Yeah, presumably you land something else, but yeah, like something else, also
land,
but...
LED pass, they pass back, and then you like dump your hand, play the Rootwalla, play the Ravager with like like instant speed, and then attack their turn, draw three cards.
Yep.
For some reason I was thinking in my mind, I'm like, well, don't you just like fold to like a ley line of the void, but you don't actually put anything in the graveyard.
Yeah,
Vengevine and Ox.
That doesn't matter. Yeah, and Ox, but like, it's fine. Like,
you don't fold though. It's actually pretty resilient that way. So, you know, that's actually
plus sometimes you cast a Burning Inquiry and your opponent's like discard three lands and you're like, oh, that's probably good for me.
I was gonna say Burning Inquiry is so funny.
It's so stupid, and especially because like if you're playing in paper, you know, it's like, okay, draw three, put these down. Roll a dice, figure out ones we discard, and there's like a time to it, right? When you're playing a Magic Online, like if somebody's F6 and you cast Burning Inquiry, it's just like, what happened?
Oh, that's so fucking sweet.
Like
the other hand
being like, where this force will come from? I'm on an island. What the hell?
Yeah, they're like pondering next funny. Time, like, okay, so I'm going to cast this Portent, and then I might like Endurance, and then I can do this, and then their hands just like, it's their turn. And
they've got suddenly, suddenly they're not pondering because it's gone.
Yeah. It's funny because like you can have a reasonable hand and you have to lead on Burning Inquiry, and then all of a sudden you didn't draw anything you needed to, you discarded the stuff you needed to keep, and your hand's useless.
Like I said, Cyberclaw 2.0.
yeah,
I wish I had the Tiger, because this is not worth buying a second Tiger for. But if I only had to buy the Vengevines, I would just be like, okay, fuck, I'll buy Vengevines, sure. Yep. I'll just like trade some cards in.
You get the Taiga to lend you.
I mean, you don't like really even need the Taiga. Like, what are you gonna do? Cast Once Upon a Time? Ugh, who needs to do that?
That's yeah, true. Play the one Stomping Ground.
Like, yeah.
Oh yeah, let's play Stomping Ground.
This is the people's cannon. Come on.
I wonder if I still have oxes.
Bone shards out of the side is so nice.
Okay, that was gonna be my next point. Yeah, like,
bone shards seems sweet in this deck.
Just being able, I mean, it just, which is what it says it does, but just having like removal that also turns on everything you need it to is very good.
We should maybe say, for people who don't know, bone shards is, what is the original card?
Bone splinters.
So I think probably everyone knows bone splinters. It's like one black mana sorcery, destroy target creature, but as additional cost, you have to sack a creature. Bone shards is the same, except you can discard a card instead of sacking a creature, which suddenly and in certain shells it also makes it much more powerful.
And it hits planeswalkers, yes,
which is very good. Very like there's a lot of situations where it's like, what the hell am I going to do here? How am I going to get out of this? And you're just like, oh, like, okay, boop, like kill your planeswalker, put this thing in, you know, we're off to the races.
Yeah, no, Bone Shards is an excellent and a well-designed card, and it's so beautiful in this deck.
Yeah, Bone Shards is awesome because like Bone Splinters is like one of those classic limited cards where like interesting decisions come up. And it was like Magic got more powerful. They bumped the power level up enough, you know?
Man, imagine being like a limited thing. Like, yeah, my bomb mythic planeswalker. And they're like, Bone Shards.
Someone did that to me. I had that online. I had the Grixis planeswalker. I drafted this deck. I'm like, hell yeah, scry two. And they like just I pass and they're just like, I was tapped out. They're like, yeah, Bone Shards, discard the two mana hasty four. Like the 2/2 guy or a 2 mana when you discard it guy.
The kitchen imp.
Kitchen imp? Oh, yeah. 1 mana when you discard it.
Killed my planeswalker, hit me for 2 in the air, and I was like, oh, wow.
That's value. Yeah. So I think I did 3 leagues with Madness, 2 leagues with the good build, 1 league with the bad. And I think I 4-1'd once and, you know, 2-3'd another time, 3-2'd another. It was fine. Real hit and miss. Real easy to, you know, turn your brain off and just play and see what happens. So if you have time to burn, you want to play some Magic is reasonable. And then, you know, I graduated to one of the things we actually talked about, which is I started trying to play some Depths. Not Sneak and Show. Have not stepped into that. Honestly, because I probably can't afford to rent the 2 Ragavans for the side. But I started out playing a classic green-black Depths list. You know, I don't know what's the in the nomenclature here. You have Lotus Petal and Spirit Guide.
This is Turbo.
As soon as you see Knot of this World, I put it into this Turbo.
Turbo Depths.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Turbo Depths. It's definitely a mindset shift trying to play it. You know, like I was prepared for it. I've seen the deck in action. I played against it a bunch. You know, I have an idea of like a lot of the kind of things, but like it does feel a lot like almost like Storm in some cases where you're sitting there and you have to piece out like the pieces you have to get through, you know, like the steps of your plan where, okay, they could have this, so I need to make sure like this is the safest thing I could be doing. Or like if you thought season, there's 2 things you have to deal with, you're like, okay, if I take this one, it protects me on this line. If I take that one, it sets me up on this line. And like trying to figure out, you know, when you go for certain things, when you copy your Thespian Stage with your Thespian Stage, and then after that, which of the 2 abilities you use. So I managed to fumble around with green black Depths and get a 3/2. Nothing amazing, but you know,
I think feels anything good. That's like positive win percentage is good, because yeah, you can just hamburger or ham sandwich, whatever, and just make 20/20s all day, but typically everyone has a plan for this kind of deck, and you actually have to put your thinking cap on.
There's a lot of run afouls around right now. The single green instant target, or each opponent sacrifices a creature with flying.
There's a lot instant, of those around.
Yeah, it's instant, and it's not target player, so you can't like veil it or something.
Oh wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
Hogak's playing a bunch of those, isn't it?
I think everybody who's playing green is playing like at least one.
Huh. Got that rate of consumption though. Get out of here.
I didn't get to write anybody.
Oh, it's, man. It's, like attacking with your Merit Lage that you made end of turn and your opponent being like run afoul and just being, I guess you can't know. I guess, sorry.
Yeah.
I guess it would be your opponent a hole. You wouldn't know if they had run afoul, but just being able to like untap and be like, eh, one green up, like mana consumption, it's a cost.
Yeah. So in paper, you would lean forward and be like, it's a cost.
It's actually a cost. Right, you can't respond with run afoul, actually. Well, you can, but it doesn't, I will have nothing to sack.
So the deck's been fun. Like trying out any new deck, honestly. I feel like from just playing the format, you tend to get an idea of how a lot of decks work and kind of what, you know, the intricate the pieces are and how to make them move. But where it really comes down to being like, I have no experience playing this deck, is trying the sideboard and like trying to figure out what to cut, especially like D&T, when you're cutting stuff, for the most part, you're like, this is actually bad here. This does nothing. So let's take that out. You know, they have a billion Karakai and I don't care about, you know, making spells cost more. So Thalia is coming out. But like trying to decide, like, am I going to shave like some duresses? Do I want to shave like some Thoughtseize effects? Maybe I want to go down on fast mana. Like, it's hard to make that decision. And it'll be a while if I keep practicing this until I get that down.
To me, that's, it really speaks to when I try to go to a different deck.
Mm-hmm.
That's not just kind of like a step away from what I'm used to. I can't do it. Like, I couldn't even fumble through. Like, you have enough experience in whatever to like kind of fumble through, where I'm just like, if I don't have a clear plan, I'm just a train wreck. And it is really helpful for me to like pull up a sideboard guide and just look at the sideboard guide and be like, oh, this is going in. And this is like, these type of cards are in, these type of cards are out. And conceptually you say, oh, okay, then that's my plan. And that's kind of what I'm wanting to do. And that's what I'm not wanting to do. And it's really helpful. Even if you're not like going card for card, or it's a different 75 or whatever, it's really helpful to understand the role that you're playing in the matchup. And so I don't know if you've kind of gone down that road, but to me, that's really important.
I think I picked the worst time to try to play this deck because Tom Hepp hasn't posted anything about it for a while. So I was like sitting down, like, let's find a sideboard guide. Let's see how this goes. Boop, 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 boop. And it's like, oh, he's on a break or something.
Yeah, he was on in, he was on dead format, wasn't he, Quinn? He was
recently.
I think Leaving Legacy.
Yeah. Anyway,
a couple months ago.
Yeah, he was on somewhat recently, but yeah, he's taken a format or a break from the format. But again, like when you look at this, the Turbo Depths version, it's pretty unchanged in many ways from a few years ago.
The core is definitely the same. It's really just like, you know, the possible sideboard cards you're playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most of that isn't even like new cards. It's just kind of like what's in flux versus other like actual new cards. But you know, after I found there's a sideboard guide and I was stuck playing green black, I thought I'm going to channel my Tom Hepp myself and find a nice gemstone mine deck. So I've been playing Bug Depths I found on just on Magic, MTG Goldfish. Which so far, I've only played three matches. I'm 2-1. You guys, before the podcast, saw a match.
Was it a match?
Yeah, it was a match.
For the listeners, we were talking through this line. We're like, oh, well, you can...
It was a big brain. It was a great line.
It was a good line. It was like crop to get a wasteland to trigger their wasteland so that they have to attack you with theirs. And then you make the token... And then you've got the Knot of this World for the swords that they were going to get. So yep. You're kind of like three layers deep at that point. And we were like, oh, this is great. And then I was saying something and Jeff clicks Thespian Stage to copy Thespian Stage. And he's like, oh, no.
That was unfortunate. Yeah, not my best moment. I wish that was recorded properly. You tried to blame it on
me. Like, you're the one with the mouse here.
I absolutely fucked it up. My only blame for you is that you said anything. You had the nerve to make a noise.
Like, I can appreciate
how prone I am to fucking up.
I can appreciate if you had already targeted the depths and then it was like, choose the one that you want to keep. I'll be quiet for that because, like, no one ever wants to mess that up.
You know what? Key point about playing this deck so far, I have not done that.
Not, I've never done it with lands either. Like, it's just, you have such a fear of doing it that it would be so punishing and so bad that you just like, you actually pay attention and do it.
I think those are the plays you don't screw up on, like online, you know, like,
yeah.
Like I'm playing, like when I play Combat Arms in Arena, I'm like, okay, now that we've done this, I'm like not gonna screw this up. But I also will like brainstorm, be like, let me put this card back in my deck and be like, oh Jesus Christ, it's still in my hand.
Yeah, it's one of those things on Magic Online too, because like some stuff is like choose the one you want to keep, and some's like choose the one you want to sack. Like yeah. I know if you ever play the cube, like Liliana of the Veil, the alt is like Fact or Fiction, but it's like the stuff you choose is the stuff that you sack. So you'll usually get like a lot of people where they sack the wrong stuff, and it's like, oh fuck. So you know, I'm always darting over to read the text and there's then some looking card at it again.
On like Arena that's like you let your opponent do something or you take damage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like take action to take damage. And today in Cube, someone played a Combustible Gear Hulk and it was like the opposite.
Mm.
And I was like so close to being like, I guess take action. Oh no, it's a decline.
I did have, I think the highlight of playing Depths so far was I played against a Mono Green Enchantress and they were playing, you know, Gaea's Touch and like Nykthos, which is gas, and they cast an Emrakul. And I had stuff to make a 20/20 on board. And I had a stifle in hand. And I was like, this is great. So
you stifled the turn?
So take the turn. Go for it, buddy. And then, you know, they attack. I make the 20/20. I stifle the Annihilator trigger and I block Emrakul with a 20/20. It was so good. I wow. felt very happy seeing that. So stifle. The bug is quite fun.
I feel like maybe that's a good place for us to move to wrap up.
Yeah.
That's living the dream, right? If you guys have anything really important to say, go ahead and say it. I was just like, oh, wow. It doesn't get better than that.
No, it doesn't.
No, I would just say that like it's a super cool deck. It's a totally different angle to play the format in. It really rewards format knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, you got the training wheels on right now, but it really helps to know that how the other decks are going to try and interact with you. And yeah, it's a super fun deck. And then the fact that it's just, again, budget. Like,
yeah. Oh, I do have one more thing that I noted down. I made some brief notes about Depths. And it's just that being the person on the other side of somebody scrambling to find an answer feels very powerful. You know, like you just put some stuff down and it's just coming up. And you can see they're like, oh, God. If they have an Elvish Spirit Guide, I lose. And they have to be so conservative. And like, it feels good to be like, you know, just bearing down on these people. And also, Elvish Spirit Guide is fucked. Every single time you like crop route with Spirit Guide, or it's like, oh, actually, I had the mana to copy it now. Like, it feels so, so good.
Spirit Guide pay for days is never not the best feeling.
Like, oh, it's so good.
Double Spirit Guide, activate stage. Like, oops. You know, they're sitting there. There's no way they have this. There's no way they have this turn. And you're just like,
oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. And the fact that you can like randomly pitch it to like Force of Vigors. I don't know if you have them or not.
Yep.
But, like,
yeah, I got Force of Vigor.
Yeah. 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 Super sweet.
You gonna buy into this deck?
We'll see how it goes. You know, I am missing almost all of it in paper, so it would be, you know, a purchase and a half.
I'm trying to think of like what I was like looking at
cards, like one Gilded Drake.
I'm like, I don't have a lot of these. I have two Lotus Petals that are just beat up that I was going to put on Facebook that you can give you.
I have one Lotus Petal. I have to buy Depths and State. Like, it's one of those things where like there's a bunch of stuff that's like not that expensive. Like, I have Thought Seizes, you know, I have the important Stifles. Like, there's no like duels, so that's not bad. It's just a bunch of stuff that's like, you know, 20 or 30 bucks.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's got this stuff sitting around.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Cool. Well, since that deck is so gas, why don't we move to That's Gas then?
All right,
Jeff, what do you got? It off.
So I think like a lot of us for this, we're scrambling to find somebody. I'm trying to think of what's happening around, you know, the legacy ecosystem. And there's a lot of good stuff, but a lot of it's people we talk about kind of quite often. And I didn't want to, you know, cycle through that. Green suggested I do air conditioners because McBain's always doing objects, which is a reasonable suggestion. But then I was going through the This Week in Legacy, and there's a list in here. It's an Esper Vile list by Magic Online user Shijimi, which I couldn't find their Twitter account, but I believe they're looking in Japan. They were taking place in that local Japan tournament that Nathan did the other week. But the header is Esper Vile, and that's really kind of underselling what this is. I don't know if you guys got to see this deck list that I put in here. Four Baleful Strix. You're like, great. Straightforward. Two Spell Stutter Sprites. The eyebrows go up a bit. Four Squadron Hawks.
This is that like Vince McMahon gif right here.
Yeah, right? You're the back of the chair. Ooh! Plague Engineer, Recruit of the Guards, Skyclave Aberration, Soul Herder, whatever. Spell Seeker. Grief. Four Solitude. Brainstorm. Four Ephemerate. One Prismatic Ending, four Force of Will, Vile, and lands, whatever.
Hawk Solitude is so sweet.
Yeah, this is so awesome.
Like, and with it, four Ephemerates, like, I was playing one Ephemerate with Spellseeker and Esper Vile for a bit because you can do the whole, like, weird loop with, like, Recruiter for Spellseeker, put in Spellseeker, get the Ephemerate, Ephemerate the Spellseeker, get another spell, you know, kind of go all the way down the loop to get a whole bunch of cards. But this is just sick. Like, Ephemerate is so fun. And being, you get the whole like pitch a Grief or Solitude and then Ephemerate it, just cast it, Ephemerate it. Like, very, very sweet list. And once, you know, I get my fix of Green Bike Depths, I'm definitely going to do a league with this.
This looks so sweet. And definitely in paper, I could see you jamming this as well.
This is currently listed at $5,000 in paper.
What?
Oh, well, the underground seas are a little expensive.
TCG is such a weird,
well, like 200 grand seas, two tundras, four Force of Will, that's
two scrubs, yeah.
Two scrub lands, that's like 4/5 of the deck, right?
The thing that scares me is that I'm just actually close to this already.
So I can almost always lend you a scrub land.
Yep. Well, yeah, it's never played easy.
Usually loan you a tundra. Oh, you have tundras, right?
I got two, baby.
How many seas do you have? One?
I have one.
I can... What am I going to play if I have 300? If I let's play like Doomsday, I can like loan you an underground sea.
Yeah, I've got all those as well, so I can cover you off.
We'll figure it out. Paper Magic, here we go.
Sweet. I have four good brainstorms.
Hey, me too. I invested when I got my Force of Wills.
So I agree, Jeff. It's definitely gas. Squadron Hawk, Solitude.
Do you want to buy a Borderless Grief?
I am okay. Oh, one extra minor shout out. XJ Cloud went to a Paper Legacy tournament. I think the first one, you know, since business is going on, and just crushed it. No problem. Promo and taxes, Caldra complete, completing the victory for a plateau.
He's really plateaued.
Do you think JR is getting more points because he's such an intimidating physical presence?
I think so.
I feel
he's
like
wearing some sick.
That's what I'm. That's what I'm like thinking of for me and you, Jeff. Is it like when we get back into paper? It's just like we just gonna glare and like psychologically. McBain looks scared already. No one can see the video, but McBain looks just pissed that we're dragging this. I'm dragging this out. So McBain, instead of that, why don't you tell us what's great? Who's your best guess?
I want to do that's gas to Jordan, or Jaywoo as he's sometimes known. And he's the owner of Magic Stronghold, our kind of local haunt that has supported Legacy for a long time. And I've known Jordan for decades now. I think the biggest purchase I ever did off Jordan is a whole set of Power Sands, a Lotus, and four Bizarre Baghdads. That was a fun time.
Just Paxson.
That was back when they were a lot cheaper. And I sold them all. But he's great. He's been a mainstay of the Vancouver community for a long time and has definitely, I'd say, matured over the years and has really kind of made Stronghold into a great business. And there's a lot of great people who work there for him, who work with him, I should say. So happy birthday, Jordan. Quinn, what do you got?
Stronghold, a very grounding place for me over the early part of the pandemic, you know, when here stores were back open and you couldn't literally hang out places, but I knew that I could just like pop a mask on my face, go into Stronghold, like buy something and like talk about magic. And it was like a lot better than talking about like when no one knew how scary things were going to be, you know?
Yeah. And I love, I'll just tell like, it's not like a specific Jordan story, but I love the times where like someone's trying to like nickel and dime, where they're like, oh, like I want like a quarter off on these cards or something like that. And he's just like, he doesn't have the time for it. He doesn't really want to deal with this. And I don't think he does it as much anymore. I think this goes back to my comment about him maturing, but like back in the day, he would just like take the cards and tear them up and be like, I don't want to do business with you. Cause like his attitude, but
someone who's worked a lot of customer facing jobs, Jordan is the type of person, like an owner of a business, that I respect the most, because I think we have all got hooked up by him, you know? Like I've even like gone in and he'll be like, hey, do you want this? I pulled it for him, like, man, I don't know, it's kind of expensive. He's like, well, do you want it or not? Because this is the price. And it'll be like, yes, at that price, absolutely. I did not think I could afford this card. But like, one, thank you for just being like, Quinn wants this German black bordered Vesuvian doppelganger. I know he does. And then the flip side to that, as someone who's had to deal with a lot of like, well, can you just do this for me? To like see the store owner be like, actually, we're not going to do that. Get out of here. To me, it's like the perfect, like, yeah, if you're like a reasonable person and you like support the store, he'll support you back. And if you want to be an asshole, just go shop somewhere else. It's like, buy your cars on face to face. See you later.
Yeah. So big shout outs to JWoo. Quinn, who do you got? Round us out.
I want to thank everyone who got a vaccine as British Columbia rolls into our stage three of our opening. Not to get ahead of the narrative, but speaking of Magic Stronghold, we might have like in paper playback pretty soon, and all that is happening because vaccination rates are up. I know there are people who are like, a lot of people were like us, I think, who were like very like anxious to just get like a needle stuck in their arm, but there are like a lot of people who were like a little bit hesitant and like did it anyways. And for whether they wanted it was because they wanted to go traveling or hug their loved ones or see their parents or just because they were like doing their part, you all did your part. And now it seems like we're kind of getting into the clear on this thing, which I think we've all along been looking forward to.
You're missing the clearest joke, which is that the COVID saga is going to phase three, which means it's our main phase and we're getting ready to sacrifice it.
I think what the thing was is the COVID saga actually had like 10 phases. And everyone,
sometimes it went back a phase.
It was like, what's that battle bond mechanic where you can like pay for a spell, like your opponents can pay for spells or other players? Yeah. Everyone paid for a blood moon to nuke the shit out of the Urza saga that was like keeping COVID in play. Send it into like exile. Shout out to you for that. Anything else, guys?
No, that was it.
That's it.
Right. Well, we'll see you in two thresholds. Thanks for listening.
Let's go see copy some stages.
McBain!